Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Profit Roadmap. As always, we're your hosts, Ryan and Becca. And this is the premier podcast created for field service pros to help you grow your business, stay on top of the latest trends, and help you provide even more value to the communities that you serve. Now, today, we're actually excited to welcome Evan Hoffman and Thaddeus Tondu, hosts of the podcast HVAC Success Secrets Revealed. Additionally, they're co-founders of home service digital marketing agency On Purpose Media. Now, we brought them in today so that they could talk to us about a very important topic that we get a lot of questions about, which is how to boost sales and lead gen during a recession. Evan, Thaddeus, how are you guys doing today?
Doing excellent. You?
Sweaty, South Florida, but...
That happens. Trade you.
I would take it, man. You guys are... Where are you guys at in Canada? You Calgary?
I'm Calgary. Evan's Edmonton, which is Alberta. Okay. So for those that are in the States, I have no clue where that is.
Thank you.
Just north of Montana.
Yep. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
I appreciate you clarifying for me. Well, guys, thanks for taking the time to join us. Why don't you tell us a bit about your backgrounds? What led you guys to start On Purpose Media?
Thad and I actually met back in 2007 when we were selling Cutco knives. So we started in direct sales. That's where we got our start into entrepreneurship and working for self. We were independent contractors there, had a system to follow, did really well. I worked there for 8 years. Thad was there for five
total. But when I had 2 years left of my tenure.
Yeah. So both had a strong background in sales and we loved doing it. We loved working with customers. That was fantastic. I started to get into branded gifts with it. So I started to dip my toe into the marketing side of things and business operations. Both of us ran our own sales offices there. So we had our own sales teams of 20 to 30 sales reps at a time, receptionist staff, everything that you would see within an HVAC home service business. Operation side, we did that on the Cutco side and had a blast there, and that was great. And then from there, I ended up leaving, and I was a comfort advisor for a bit, working for an HVAC company. Had a blast there. Got to know the guys really well. I was only working part time there, but I was the number two sales rep in the office. Had a blast doing it. But all of their leads were generated through Home Depot leads, and we only got paid 7% commission on those versus 10% on any other marketed leads. And so I just went into the office and I asked why, like, what is the reason for all this reliance on Home Depot? Why aren't we generating our own leads? And I started by asking for referrals from customers, because that was the old Cutco approach, was you always ask for a referral. There was no marketing that you did. It was all referral based word of mouth marketing. So I generated my own referral script, put that together, started generating my own referrals as a comfort advisor. That was fun. And then I started poking holes in the business and just asking, you know, why aren't you doing any Google ads? Why aren't you doing any Facebook ads? You know, we had marketed when we ran our offices with Facebook back in 2009, we were advertising on Facebook. So back when it was in its infancy and
yeah, that's early.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's like back when YouTube was only born in 2009, right? Like,
yeah. Back when everything was super cheap on Facebook, it was great, but I started showing them how to do that and run their own ads through Google ads and through Facebook ads. And they started to see a lot of success with it. And they hit the ground running. They still exist now and they're running a great business, but I ended up leaving there after just 6 months. And, Thad had reached out to me. He had started working with a magazine company, as the first person in Western Canada to launch a magazine with this company. And it was all directed towards affluent neighborhoods. So we started working with home service businesses again, but all in print marketing. We were working with home service businesses, helping them target affluent neighborhoods through a branding, a play and a branding approach. And he reached out to me, asked me if I wanted to join him there. So I did. And we ended up working there for 6 years together. And it was through that frustration of working with home service businesses, local businesses, struggling to make a digital impact and generate leads for their business. Branding is one thing, but if your business isn't at a size where the brand really matters because you don't have enough phone calls coming into your business, I'm sorry, but your brand doesn't matter. You need to be able to generate enough phone calls to continue your business running so you can keep your technicians busy, so you can keep the vans on the road, so you can get in front of customers, so you have a brand to actually build. So it's one of those things like the chicken or the egg concept, right? Which one came first? Well, you need to be doing both at the same time, essentially. But yeah, it was through that frustration of local businesses saying, you know what, we don't know who built our website. We can't get a hold of the person who built our website. We don't know how to do Google ads. We don't know how to get the phone to ring. And this magazine isn't working for us because it was a branding play. And anyone that looks in a magazine at an ad, they're not going to call a business and say, hey, I saw you in a magazine. They're going to call them and say, I found you on Google. So that's where we said, you know what, we need to pivot here. We need to make a transition and switch into digital and start working for ourselves and stop working for someone else. And so we did, pivoted in 2019. That's when we started On Purpose Media and really niched down to mostly the HVAC space, but also into just other home service businesses as well, plumbing, electrical, solar, et cetera, in 2020, and been loving it ever since.
Awesome.
Couldn't have said it better myself. You know, the only additional thing to really put on that is, you know, the frustrations, right? And not being able to get in touch with their marketing company. You know, I've been a long proponent of this, and this just isn't relation to a digital marketing company. This is just any company out there, that if you have average results and above average communication, you're going to retain customers long-term. Right. When you're providing a service to somebody, when there's interaction, that, like, accounting is a good example. Like, we had an accountant that we got rid of because, hey, you know what? They provided great work, but on the flip side, their communication was shit. Mm-hmm. And we're like, well, I'm out, because even though the results and the work was great, their communication still wasn't that great. And so when you have that, now you can really build a successful business. And I found that a lot of marketing companies, in dealing in talking with these individuals, we're missing that mark. So when you can build in something like that, it becomes a long way and goes a long way to building a more successful business.
You mentioned that you pivoted from magazine to digital marketing. So that was one of my questions, like, is print media dead? Absolutely. Like, just, should it all be, should any like service business be thinking digital?
Great question. And print, I believe, is not dead. And there's certain instances where it actually thrives and where it can go a long way. And I spent a long time convincing a lot of individuals in terms of the role that I had within the organization, leading Western Canada and building that up from, you know, the first ever magazine in Western Canada to, you know, 40 or 50, 60 or so at the time when I left. I don't remember the exact number. But when, you know, trying to say, hey, print isn't dead. The part that really matters, though, is when somebody sees you in print, it's an impression, right? Mm-hmm. It's a branding impression. And then they see your vehicle in the neighborhood. It's a branding impression. And then when they Google your business because they see your vehicle or they see it in print or that you get a direct mail piece into your door and you're really hitting that neighborhood hard, now you have to have the good online presence in order to be able to capture that individual, right? So it goes back to what Evan said, chicken or the egg. Well, get your digital stuff done right, so that when people do search you from those traditional means, and I think there's a size in a business where you get to that point where you can do a branding play, right? An individual in our space has even mentioned this before, and they're in California, and they have seasonalities ish with their business. Like, it doesn't get as cold as it does in Canada through the course of the winter. So they're not as busy, right? So he actually takes his budget and he shifts it to more branding throughout the slow season, throughout the winter, and then shifts it from the branding to the digital come the busy time, because now people are searching for his product. But if he's been front and center, 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 he's been front and center. Now when they have the problem, they Google it and he shows up there, they have familiarity with the name. And that's really what print can do for a business.
Yeah, that's refreshing, because I was going to ask maybe if it's generational, because I was at a conference a few years ago and I had some business cards, and I remember everyone, maybe because they were younger than me, but I'm not that old, they all wanted to network or connect via Instagram. Like, no one wanted to trade business cards or like any print or anything like that. It's just all about Insta or Facebook. That's what everyone wanted.
And there's ebbs and flows in that, right?
Right.
Like, you know, I had somebody knock on our door to try to pitch us a service. I'm like, hey, do you have like a card or something you can leave behind? He's like, well, I have a digital card. I'm like, okay, great. And right. I scanned it and I didn't do anything with it. So like that part was lost, where if I had like an actual leave behind pamphlet or piece of paper that I could have set on my desk when I'm done to go back to it. Like, I don't even remember the company's name. To be honest, he knocked on the door and it was gone because I scanned a card. I'm not going to remember the guy's name. Leave me something I can put on my desk and see it. I'm going to see it. I'm going to see it. I'm going to see it. It's actually funny that the magazine thing that we did for a while the community I live in, it's an average community. It's not the affluent community, but they've brought it out to different markets. But the community that I live in now is getting one of these companies' magazines. Like, I get in my mailbox. But it's funny because like, I looked at this, I'm like, okay, I actually read it, right? I kind of want to see when the next one is coming out because I want to see the family on the front cover. And that's what makes it unique, because of the print that it's done in the right way. Newspapers, you know, sure, they're dying. How many people get a newspaper these days? Not many. right? Or the free ones, right, that are in stores. Those ones are okay because people read them if they're eating out somewhere. But by and large, people are going to these guys right here, and that's where they're getting their news. And so it just depends on the print and what somebody's looking to accomplish.
Well, and I think it comes back to the marketing message as well, right? Like, there's demand fulfillment, there's demand generation. Demand fulfillment is, hey, I got a problem. My air conditioner's not working right. It's hot, it's humid, it's 110 degrees right now, and I need you here now to fix my air conditioner. Nobody goes to Facebook to solve that. Nobody goes to the magazine to solve that. Everyone goes to Google to solve that. Mm-hmm. When you've got a mechanism like a magazine where you can put out an article and educate someone, or a blog post and educate someone, or a social media post and educate someone, that's demand generation. You're creating demand out of something where someone didn't know they had an issue. Only 3% of the market at any given time has a demand for your service. So what is it that you're doing to get in front of the 97% who are not interested, or they don't know that they're interested in what it is that you have to offer, so you can educate them and put something in front of them that's going to get them to think about it and create that demand for your business?
Like, so like the 97% you were talking about and getting in front of them, and the 3% that are aware that they have a problem, when things slow down, so like thinking about like HVAC, like their slow season, stuff like that, what are things that people can do in that slow season to boost those numbers?
Utilizing outbounding, right? Mm-hmm. And this applies to a lot more than just HVAC. I mean, a lot of home services can spin this in the right way. And now I'm going to talk specifically HVAC businesses, because that's you know, majority of our clients. When you look at slow season, something like a product like, I don't want to say the product name because I don't know if you guys are in competitors with them. I don't think so. You guys are more of an FSM, where they're more of like the front end CRM, sort of a thing, but you can utilize different products, right? So to be able to outbound text message, your individual, set up a campaign or an automation to say, hey, guess what? Summertime is done, or even if it's the springtime, right, and kicking off, you can kind of interchange these. You know, springtime is a good example. It's going to get hot. Why don't you get an air conditioning tune-up and clean up the wording, guys? I'm not here to talk about the specifics of the wording, but do a campaign where you're talking about AC tune-ups. Offer a value-added offer where you come out and you do a tune-up, right? It's almost like a break even or a loss leader in a sense, right? Don't offer like $0 tune-ups. That's not something that I recommend somebody to do. But a $79 tune-up or $77 tune-up or an $87 tune-up, generally numbers that end in 7 tend to convert a little bit better from a psychological standpoint. So $77 tune-up, $87 tune-up, $67 tune-up, whatever it is, you go to the house now, you're in there to tune up the units. You prioritize those based off of age of system. So if you look for ones that are 7+ years or older, now you can start to say, okay, well, I'm going to prioritize older ones that are going to have a higher propensity for repair work, or giving them the option to replace their unit, right? And so you can do this in the slow season. Now, if you're in a colder climate, guess what you do? You do the same thing with furnaces in the fall, right? And now you can be able to build that. Another thing that a person can do is when somebody calls you during the busy season, you prepare for it for the slow season. Here's what I mean. When somebody calls you, what do most companies do? Do they grab the information up front, or do they try to talk about booking them onto the board first? Right? They try to talk about booking them onto the board first. They don't gather any information. And when they find out they actually might not have an opportunity or an appointment for 3, 4, 5 days down the road, now they've lost that lead. Lead's going to go, I'm going to call somebody else, somebody that can come fix my problem today. You know, it's 100 degrees out today. I want my air conditioning fixed today or first thing tomorrow. So flipping that to say, okay, great, Mrs. Jones, just in case you get disconnected, what's the best number to reach you at? Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. What's your email? Just when we do book you, we can send you appointment confirmations, et cetera, et cetera. Now you've got their name. Now you've got their phone number. Now you've got their email. If you want to take it one step further, get their address, right? Now you've captured all of their data. And then you transition to booking them on the board. If you can't book them on the board, you adequately dictate that in your FSM software or your CRM or whatever software you're using. Field Edge, right? Use Field Edge. Yep. And then in the fall, here's what you do. You have a database now of all the people that you can get to along with their problem that they had. Reach out to them and say, hey, or outbound call them. Hey, Mrs. Jones, I know that you reached out to us a couple months ago about – your AC wasn't working. Did you ever get that fixed? Whatever happened there? How's it doing now? I can come out and do a tune-up for you if you like, so it's ready for next season.
Well, and I would even go one step further than that and just say, not even bring up the fact that we didn't service them in the summer, and not even ask the question of, did you get it resolved? Just straight up say, hey, you called us this summer for an AC repair. We're following up with you for your tune up for the fall for heating season.
Right.
Right. You're not lying to them. You're not tricking them. It's none of that. You're telling the truth. They called you, and now you're calling them for your tune up. You've already paid for this lead.
Right.
Why wouldn't you capture it and reutilize that during a time when things are a little bit slower?
Oh yeah. Maximize that.
On that note, it's good to, I'm glad, Thaddeus, I'm glad that you brought up, like, you capture their information pretty much up front. Mm-hmm. That's super powerful. Especially for marketing purposes, and then reaching back out to them and getting all that stuff done. On one hand, sometimes when we talk about that or that comes up, we get pushed back on, like, well, it's hard to get that information. Actually, I love the way that you phrased it there, because you lead with the benefits of providing that information, right? What if we get disconnected? What's your phone number? Mm-hmm. I can send you email alerts. Everybody has an email address. Nobody wants to give it to you, but give them a reason to give it to you, right?
Correct.
Now, and if you're capturing that information, I gotta do a little plug here. If you're using Field Edge, you can use Marketing Edge to automate these campaigns that we're talking about right now. And if you're using Service Autopilot, you can do very similar stuff with the automations on that side. I'll let Becca speak more to the automation side and more the Field Edge HVAC plumbing electrical side, but all that stuff is possible. And if you are using our software, then this is stuff that you guys very much have access to.
Yeah. And it's something so I'm on the training team on the Service Autopilot side. So I deal mostly with a lot more lawn care cleaning companies and some HVAC, but that's like everything you described is that whole pipeline of when a lead calls in or when you're outbound, get all that information up front. You're going to save yourself hassle later because you can build an automation campaign. We have two-way texting where you can like build a pipeline and a process to follow through, especially during those like slow seasons where you can do like additional ad hoc work for these customers and just take all that information. It's key. So yeah, all that's golden.
How many companies that have maintenance programs and maintenance schedules? Great. You've got a maintenance group of, or a membership group of what, 300 customers, 400 customers. How many more are in your database that you're not touching on a regular basis?
Yeah.
Right? How are you bringing them into your ecosystem? How are you reaching back out to them, communicating to them that you offer service, that you offer value? Do you have an email newsletter that you send out? Do you have a regular scheduled maintenance program? Maybe they dropped off your maintenance schedule. You know, I had asked Billy Stevens about this a couple of weeks ago, and just how many members at your business, at Billy Go, are dropping off of the maintenance schedule on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Said 30% every year are dropping off. Right. The ironic thing is a lot of them end up rebooking. So even though they don't pay the membership, they end up coming back anyways. So, but that's an important number to know, so that you are on top of your outbounding on an ongoing basis, regardless if they're a member or not.
Like, what is your thought on, like, let's say you're automating a lot of this process. Do you think it's pretty important still to have like a personalized approach in your messaging and your communication? For that continuous, like, consistent client retention?
I mean, you want to automate as much as you possibly can.
Right.
Because it just removes those easy ones that are going to convert super easy. But even at a really high level, you might get a 40% response rate mm-hmm. off of your text and email campaigns. So you still need to pick up the phone and call the other 60%, because that's a huge number that you're missing out on if you're not picking up the phone and outbounding. And if you can't do it yourself, hire a company to make those outbounding calls for you. Because that's the other thing, is an outbounding caller is a very different psychology approach to mm-hmm. communication than an inbound caller.
Yeah.
Psychological, not psychology. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I knew you were going with it.
Both, really. I mean, psychological, but the psychology in it is also different too.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yep.
You were technically correct, which is the best kind of correct.
There you go.
All right. So I don't want to spend too much talking about us, because we have you guys here. So you guys also have a super successful podcast, HVAC Success Secrets Revealed. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So HVAC Success Secrets Revealed, or HVAC Revealed sometimes for short. It's been a journey. It's been a ride. Evan and I started it Oh, coming up on 3 years this September. Technically our first guest was a little bit later, but the name change came a little bit later. We ended up having a coaching program that we're a part of for our own business, On Purpose Media, the marketing company. Mm-hmm. And we just decided to say, hey, on Wednesdays, let's drink whiskey and talk about what we're doing in our business and what we're learning and what we're just being transparent, right? With everything that it is that we do. And so we started that, and they were shitty videos. they were absolutely downright atrocious. And I'm sure they still live on the internet. We have a database somewhere of some of the original content that we started filming, like right when we very first started. And I think I was wearing a dress shirt. No offense to dress shirts, but I'm not a dress shirt guy anymore. It's like, I wear shorts and track pants at home. So we started talking about our business and where it's at and what we're learning and what we're doing. We're like, hey, you know what? Maybe we can have some guests on. So we ended up having a friend of ours on and talked about, we ended up doing the Gallup's Clifton Strengths Assessment. And so we talked about that on it. And then we're like, hey, maybe we should have an HVAC guest on. So I think we brought one of our clients on. Jason Julian from Julian Heat and Air. And so we brought him on. So we chatted with him. And we're like, well, let's do a couple more. And so we ended up sort of bringing people on within the space. We're like, well, shit, I think we're onto something. And by the way, we were going live with it from the very beginning. You know what? Let's instead of pre-recorded, let's just go live. Because again, raw, real, and authentic is the MO of the show. And we were doing it originally on Zoom, just going live on Facebook. And then we found StreamYard. We started adding some color and stuff to it and bringing the guests on. And it became this whole production. And then we finally said, okay, I think we're onto something. We should probably come up with a name. So that was December of 2020. put out, and I think we're, 130 episodes now. I don't know the exact number, in and around there, maybe 140. In there, and we go live every Wednesday, 2 p.m. Mountain, give or take an hour, depending on the day. And unless we're traveling, there's the odd time we're off for vacation. But yeah, we're going live with it every Wednesday, interviewing individuals to help them unleash the ultimate HVAC business.
The show was built out of one of our core values as a company is to give value first. We always knew it was going to be impossible to work with every single company that existed across North America. So we thought we'd put together the show, and selfishly, we could learn a heck of a lot from the guests that we have on the show too, and bring that back to our clients. But the main part was just to extract knowledge and be able to share it with people and make an impact. And it's really cool to show up at events now and have people come up to us and be like, oh my gosh, I've listened to your show and I listened to this episode and I applied this and this happened in my business and it took off because of it. Like, thank you so much. And I mean, it's not us, it's the guests that we have on the show, but it's phenomenal. It's so fun and very rewarding.
Do you have like a favorite success story around that?
One of my favorites is, his name, no, we'll leave him. His name's Joe. he's in the North. And, he came up, he had actually said last year before we went to an event in Vegas, Profit Rocket, he had reached out and just said, hey, I want to meet you guys when you're there. And we did end up sitting down with him, and he told us about all the different episodes that he had listened to and what he had applied. But the best part was actually the conversation that we had at the table with him, because he was talking about how much he wanted to grow his business. And Thad actually stopped and asked him and said, well, hey, can I ask you something? Are you happy right now? Like, is growing your business to that level exciting for you? And he paused and he sat there for a minute. He's like, no. Like, then why are you doing it? Wow. If it doesn't light you up, if going after building a giant business doesn't light you up and doesn't excite you, then why would you go after that? More often than not, people set a goal because they think that it's the right thing to do, but it's actually not the goal that they should be setting for themselves, because it's not the right one for them. There are many business owners out there that building a $100 million business is who they are, and that's great for them. Others are fascinated by running a $1 million chuck in a truck. I'm going to do it on my own business. Mm-hmm. That's who they are. And it's great. That's perfect. Be the best that you can be in the business that you want to be in, but you don't need to chase a goal that's not fit for you. So that was my favorite story. And he's crushing it with a couple guys in his business. And he's doing an incredible job. He just rebranded his business using Kickcharge, and it looks phenomenal. And he's doing an unbelievable job.
Yeah, that's an awesome story.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think there's real good, there's some weight behind that one. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I did a lot.
Jim Rohn talks about, you know, had I known what going for some of those early goals would have cost me, I never would have paid the price. Every time you put out a goal and you go after it, there are sacrifices that you have to make in order to achieve that goal. And you have to ask yourself, is it worth it for me to give up all of these other things in order to go after that? And in some cases, it's not.
So ask yourself if you really want it, and is it really worth it? Like, what's your intent here? Yeah. You know, those are good questions. I see that as a theme. Like when we've spoken to other people about marketing, it's just like everyone always says, number one, what is your intent? What is your purpose? Like, why are you even doing this in the first place? Business, right. Starting a business, running a business, marketing, it's not easy. It takes work. And consistent work. So yeah, those were really good things to ask.
Yeah. I like the idea of staying connected to what drives you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, what's your Simon Sinek? Start with why. You know, what's your higher why? And why you, like, when you have that and you know why you're doing what it is that you're doing, now you're enveloped into what it is you're actually doing, right? And a lot of times, and going back to the Jim Rohn quote, a lot of people say, well, I'm a businessman with a family, or and I'm an entrepreneur with a family, right? What if you wanted to be a family man that just happens to have a business? Or family woman, for that matter, right? Not discriminating here. You know, what if, like, but really, right? Like, you know, when you think about that, and a lot of times people, I think, get that notion incorrect because they see somebody hustling all the time on Facebook or Instagram, and that, you know, this massive life of running their business. But what's the sacrifice that they have? You know, do they get to see their kids? And somebody phrased it to me, and I can't remember if it was Jordan Peterson when he had his 12 Principles. Book. And, you know, that the, especially when you look at kids, right? Like I'm going through now, I've got a 3-month-old and a 2-year-old, right? You know, the time before they're 4 or 5 years old is such an impressionable, innocent time of having kids, right? Like my kid was running around naked in the backyard, sliding down his plastic slide head first yesterday on his stomach, right? Like it's such a sweet, innocent move, right? And so we like, I stopped work a little bit early, go outside and hung out in the day. And somebody said, well, you know, I'm building my business for my family. But then you're never around. Right. You're never there. You're always at the office. You're always working. Well, what if your family doesn't want that? What if your family wants their mom or their dad to be present, to be there? Maybe that's what they want. They don't want you to build this business for them. They want you to be there with them in their life.
And that was a conversation we had two weeks ago with Michael Munez. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but he was a plumber. He wasn't even a business owner. And that was a conversation that he had with his wife at that time. And she told him, I don't want all this. I would give all of it up if I could just have more of you. And from that moment forward, he started to plan his exit. He retired at 33.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's similar stories. I know you probably hear it too, Ryan, where we're talking to people. That's why a lot of people usually sign up with our software or use like some of our specific features, because work-life balance, you know, like being present with your family. It's pretty key and important. So giving your life back. Mm-hmm.
Finding that balance of getting the right things on your plate that impact your business, but still give you the time to live that life that you do have. Very, very crucial stuff.
Let me ask you guys, you've been running this podcast for a little bit. You've had some good guests on here so far. What have been some of your highlights, your favorite moments?
The highlight for me is from one of our first, sorry, Becca, I'm going to go first. I had something pop in like immediately. So one of the highlights for me that something that stuck with me is one of our first guests. Her name is Libby DeLucian. She runs a couple businesses. She's actually in Southwest Florida. She lives probably 10, 20 minutes away from me. But like one of the things that she said that stuck with me was that not all turnover is bad turnover. She was talking about some context around that was like, in her business, when she hires people in, she's there to help people grow. So like if somebody grows with her business and then moves on to something else, right? Like that's not necessarily a negative. So not necessarily exactly related to what we were talking about, but I think about that line all the time.
One of an early episode that we had was with Tersh Blissett, who's also another podcaster and happens to be a home service business owner as well. He talked about how he would any employee that he had in his business who aspired to one day run their own business, he would open up everything to them. You know, a lot of home service owners would definitely pull back on that. And I've even had some guys that I've talked to who started their own business. They got fired as soon as they mentioned to their boss that they wanted to open their own business because they saw him as competition. They wanted him out now.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Kirsch did the opposite, and he opens up everything and tells you everything that you need to do to run your own business. Some people will take that and run. They now become an ally in the market, not a competitor, not an enemy.
That's so much more valuable.
Right? And for the ones that look at that and get terrified because they see how much work is required, they're no longer going to want to do that. And they're going to be even more grateful to be an employee and working with you. Right? And for that guy that is interested in going out and doing it on his own, guess what? How much more involved is he going to be in your business now because you opened up your books to him? Because you opened up everything to him. He now knows what he needs to go out and do, or she now knows what she needs to go out and do in order to open her own business. She sees that being 3 years out. Well, I need to put in all the work that I can here so I can make mistakes here and grow this business before I go and start my own.
That's on the same line of, you know, when people say, well, I don't want to, what if I invest in my team? What if I train them and they leave? Well, what if you invest in them and they stay? Or what if you don't invest in them and they stay? Yeah. Right? You might as well have that transparency. And somebody's like, well, I don't know if I want to open my books. Well, then don't give them dollar specifics. Give them percentages. Right? Right.
Becca, what was your favorite highlight?
I think this was back in March when we interviewed. I can't think of his name. I think his name is Andrew. And we also interviewed, was it Train? I think he was HVAC, and they also they trained like military veterans coming out to help.
Yeah, the Trade Warriors program.
That was like, just super inspirational because it was just all about community and involving community and giving a second chance and teaching skills to our servicemen and women. I think that's what stood out to me most. It's like, it's about being in the community, being of service and value. Like you mentioned earlier, like having value.
Hey guys, if you're a train dealer, check out the Trade Warriors program. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
It is genuinely a super cool program. I mentioned lead generation in the beginning of it. So let me shift our focus a little bit that way. So, are we in a recession? Like, is that?
I know, right?
Is everybody in agreement?
People have been saying that since like 2020.
I feel like people are dancing around it. So, yeah. Right. So anyway, where I'm going with that is like, do you guys feel overall that the quality of leads has changed with whatever changes in the economy?
I think it depends really on if you're going after demand fulfillment or demand generation, right? And that's looking at distinguishing factors on that. And look, whether we actually get into the recession or we don't get into the recession, are we in one or we aren't in one? At the end of the day, the consumers are changing their spending habits and their patterns. But I will say this, if you're a business owner and you're thinking the recession is going to end your business, guess what? It's going to end your business. If you're a business owner and you're thinking the recession is not going to end your business, guess what? It's not going to end your business. No, I started...
Take it one step further.
Right.
If you're a business owner and you think the recession is going to be the launching pad for the business that you can become, that's what it's going to be.
Right. Whatever story is that you want to tell yourself. Like I started a print magazine, the first of Western Canada. It's like I think we had one magazine in all of Canada, maybe two when I first started. And it was in the US and it was uphill battle. I did it in 2014 in Alberta, which is an oil economy, which was in a recession at the time for the economy itself, and still continued to grow a print magazine because my mind was already made up that it wasn't going to be a limiting belief in myself to be able to grow the business. To go back to the demand generation, demand fulfillment, what we're starting to see in the consumers is they're shifting a little bit of a focus away from a lot of the install-based type work. So they're not necessarily looking to replace equipment. And by the way, there are exceptions to this, and there are people that are going to replace their units, and there is financing available to be able to help mitigate this. So I don't want to paint every single one of these into one corner. This is a generality here, right? And so a lot of times people are shifting their spend from instead of spending $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 on replacing my entire system, what is my repair going to be in order to be able to get my system another year or two's worth of life, right? Or 3 years worth of life. And so you're starting to see a little bit of a trend towards that more than the trend to full replacements.
Right. Well, and also if you look at historical buying patterns, HVAC equipment gets replaced on average once every 15 years. What was 15 years ago from 2023? Well, it was 2008. That was when the last recession happened. So not a lot of people bought a lot of equipment that year or for the next couple of years, right? So you've got that on top of the workforce is now going back to work instead of working from home. And so they're not requiring their equipment to be running as frequently at home because they are no longer there. Right. So you've got all of these things. Plus there's the uncertainty in the economy. And you just add that on top. So are we in a recession? Are we not? I think we're kind of teetering on it where it could happen if the government decided to allow it to happen. Literally a push of a button and it could, the whole thing could implode. But at the end of the day, like Thad said, you're going to get out of it what you make of it. Right. If you choose not, we used to have a button because we were selling Cutco at the time in 2008. And it said, I choose not to participate in this recession. I sell Cutco. And it's a mindset, right? You're going to find the people who are still working. You're going to find the people who are willing to spend the money, renovate their home. Like all of these things still happened in 2008. There was just less of it. And so for businesses that want to succeed and want to persevere and want to push through, they're going to find the opportunities and they're going to go get it.
And here's the other thing on whether we get to the recession or not. When it comes to marketing spend, look back, do the studies, figure it, do your own research, you know, DYOR. But I've done it and I haven't done it since 2014, 2015. But when advertising really became prevalent after World War II, and in advertisements beforehand, but it really took off after World War II. And you look at what happens roughly every 7 to 10 years, right? Recessions, right? This one was prolonged because of COVID, which was kind of an interesting, you know, blip in the radar. Everybody thought it was going to hit it, go into recession in COVID. It did the opposite. And now we're feeling those effects, right? But you look at it, it's historical. And we always know it goes down. We always know it goes back up, booms and busts, right? If you look at the companies and you look at the studies of companies that have pulled back their marketing spend, because that's generally where people want to save money. During a time of need, is they're going to pull back the marketing spend. Oh, it's easy to cut that line item out. Right. It is easy to cut that line out. But the companies that pull their money out of advertising versus the companies who continued the same or even increased their marketing spend in a recession, those companies that increased or stayed the same captured more market share when consumers started spending more again, right? Remember, it's cyclical. It's going to go back up, right? So you can position yourself in that way by continuing to spend money on marketing. It doesn't have to be necessarily all digital. Some of the more traditional forms can work here. We started the show with that, right? They can work here from that branding and that top of mind awareness. So that way, when they are ready, guess what? You're positioned yourself as a business to take advantage of it when it comes back.
For businesses that don't know about it, SEO and boosting their sales, how can they use that during, especially during recession, but just period? Like, talk a little bit more about that.
For one, with SEO, go watch one of our videos and we can send you the link for it. But there's seven different aspects of SEO. So when a company signs up for it, they're like, yep, I'm going to do an SEO package. I've hired someone for it. It's taken care of. Do you know what they're actually doing for you? Do you know what they're actually putting their time, energy, and effort into to make sure that they're generating results for you? Because there are seven different areas that you need. There's keyword research, there's on-page, there's technical, there's off-page, there's your local business and GMB profile, and there's content. So if you're not touching every area, you're not gonna be able to actually grow your business, and you're definitely not gonna compete with some of the bigger players within the market that have been doing all of that for the last 10, 15 years since they had a website. So definitely that's one thing, is just make sure that what it is that you're investing in is actually going to position you to succeed long term.
Yeah.
When it comes to SEO.
So yeah, we'll get that link from you and we can put it in the show notes. We'll make it easy for you guys to take a look at it. Now, SEO is a spooky term for a lot of people, right? It's this kind of specter that people kind of like know what it does, but don't know what it does. If you were to explain to me like I was five, what SEO is, how'd you guys go about that? I'm curious what y'all's take on it is.
First off, I love the fact that you said if I was five, because one of the things that I'm on a big kick on and I've been on the last couple of weeks with our internal team is when you ask somebody to do something, explain it to somebody like they're a fifth grader, right? So if you can explain in detail to the fifth grader, even a person that's 5 years old in this case, to be able to execute on the task, now you've given them all the information. You don't actually have to create more work by going back and editing things that weren't clear in the beginning. So being crystal clear on your instructions. But I'm going to let Evan take the SEO one because he's more the SEO expert than me.
SEO in its simplest terms is a series of tasks that can be completed so that when someone is in need of your service and they go to Google and they search for you, you show up.
Sweet.
That's in its simplest terms. It's making sure that you're showing up when people are looking for you.
With a variety of different problems.
And yes. Is this something people, you mentioned like a service like contacting an agency maybe or marketing company. Is this something people can do on their own or, I mean, obviously there's a lot of research and
I mean, how I started diving into it and learning it was YouTube That's University. Sure. Right? Mm-hmm. Like I would watch videos while I was washing dishes. That was it. And then I built our website and I mean, we rank for a ton of different keywords around digital marketing and SEO and social media marketing and PPC marketing across North America because I invested into our own SEO, right? We do it for companies across the country as well and across North America, just because we built out a framework of what it is that's required in order to rank. And we continue to adjust and pivot on that too, because Google's always changing their algorithms and what it is that they're looking for. But when things are done correctly, you don't see those big blips when you try to cheat the system. And this is one of the things that I challenge a lot of marketers on when they're thinking about it. They're trying to beat Google in order to rank. And that's not the thing that you should be focused on. You need to focus on the other businesses that are in the community. That's who you're trying to outrank. Yep. You're not trying to trick Google. You're trying to just do what it is that those other companies have done on their website, on their Google business profile, match that, and then find areas of opportunity to do a little bit more. And that's it.
Smart.
Yep. Here, so in addition to that, you asked, you know, can somebody, you know, do it themselves? Yeah, but should they? No. And here's why. But I'm going somewhere with this, right? So like, and the reason I say no isn't to say, hey, call us. I mean, okay, call us, right? But at the same time, do you have a bookkeeper who does your books? Yeah. Would you do it yourself? No, because you don't know what to do with your books, right? Can you learn it? Sure, but it's going to take more time away from what you're an expert in. Same thing with accounting, right? Could you do it yourself? Yeah, but are you? No, because they're an expert and they're going to be able to find ways to be able to mitigate the amount of taxes that you pay. You know, if you have a legal problem, are you going to tackle it yourself? No, you're going to hire a lawyer. Why? Because they're an expert, right? You have a medical problem. Are you going to try to diagnose it yourself? Well, probably because you're going to go to Google and you're going to look up the symptoms and it's going to be everything gives you cancer. But then you're going to go see a doctor and they're going to be able to diagnose it, right? On and on and on. Insert any particular profession that you have here. And it should be no different with somebody that is looking to do SEO, right? We have, you know, when you look at like what we do, I mean, we have four team members and a team lead behind it, right? They're all experts in it. And that's what they spend all day doing. If you're spending all day running your business, should you actually go and invest the time to be able to learn about SEO? No, go invest the time into your business. What gives you the most amount of productivity within it? Probably not learning SEO on your own.
Dan Sullivan wrote a great book on this called Who Not How, right? When you come up to a problem, instead of asking, how am I going to overcome it? It's who is going to help me overcome it. That might be an outside source, a marketing agency in this case, a bookkeeper, a lawyer, et cetera. It might be hiring someone internally. But at the end of the day, it's who is going to help me overcome this, not how can I figure it out, because you already have your tasks that you need to be diving deep into.
If you do take that onto your plate, right, like that's less time you have to watch your kid slide face first down the slide at the end of the day,
naked.
Right?
Yeah, so. Naked. Yeah. With a hat on. He had a hat on. So
yeah. I wasn't technically naked.
No.
All right. So when it comes to SEO and stuff, I guess we kind of already talked about this. I was going to ask, like, if somebody wanted to like get started with that, I feel like I know the answer to this, but like find someone to help you with it.
Yeah. Interview some companies, right? What to look for, know what not to look for, and then have conversations with multiple different companies. Things to look out for. Majority of SEO companies are going to want to build you a new website. We're no different. There's the odd exception where some websites are done the right way and we'll bring it in, right? Everybody wants to put their own stamp on things. At the end of the day, when they rebuild your website, you got to ask yourself, is that my website? If I stop my services with you, what happens to my site? Does it stay up and running? There are companies out there, not going to name them, that will take your site down the second that you stop working with them. Now you're fucked, right? Because now you, everything that you invested in is gone on it, right? And if the company redesigns the website, hey, that's fine. They're going to put in measures to make sure that that juice that went into that website isn't gonna disappear. That's number one. Number two, do you trust them, right? Do you know, like, and trust them? I mean, know and like, okay, maybe, but trust is a big thing, and being able to have that in there. And I mentioned the know, like, trust just because that's a big thing in when you buy from somebody in sales, you know, everybody uses that, right? In there. And those would be kind of two big things. But then the other caution is be wary of the people that are charging you $400 to $500 for SEO, right? There's very little that somebody can do the right way for such a low cost. I know that it sounds, you know, we're inflating the market that, you know, for people that do it the right way, but it's to do what we do, to be able to get the results that we get, there's no way that we can do it for $400 to $500 a month.
Correct. Good stuff isn't cheap and cheap stuff isn't good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's, I mean, it's skilled labor at the end of the day, right? Mm-hmm. It's no different than the services that our viewers provide is the way that I look at it.
Well, like, and I look at Tommy Mello as a good example of this, an A1 garage door and what he's done. And he knows that he's one of the most expensive outfits in town. And he openly admits that. He's like, well, you know what? Yeah, you know what? We cost a lot. But does everybody else pay their employees six figures? Does everybody else give their employees great culture? Does everybody else give their employees full benefits and on and on and on and take care of their people first, right? That's the other part, right? Like, are they actually taking care of their people? Are they in a great culture? In order to be able to take care of people the right way, yeah, you know what? You got to charge a little bit more. And most business owners, I think, understand that if they're running a great business, to be able to say, okay, well, you know, I'm not going to go with the cheapest because I want to go with somebody who actually takes care of their people.
There's a company that runs around here. They've got big green trucks. And Evan, you already said the line in script on every single side of their truck. It says, good work isn't cheap and cheap work isn't good.
Nice.
And I was like, I mean, that's marketing. I loved it.
Absolutely, it is. So,
and I remember, I don't want to name their name, but yeah.
I mean, it sets the expectation right up front, right?
Absolutely.
If that's on your website, that's in your marketing, that's on your vans, and it's consistent. And then when you show up in the house, they're already expecting to pay fair market for the job. And Tommy says this in his book, right? Charging what it costs to do a great job is in the customer's best interest.
Because now you get people who are wanting to do a good job for that customer.
You talked a little bit about like pulling back the curtain and what to look for in a company that's going to help you with SEO. So can we extract some more of that secret sauce? What are some of your most successful clients doing that maybe other people aren't?
Well, there's one thing is you can't just hire a marketing company and think they're going to do everything without your input. Right.
It's not a passive process.
Right. Yeah. It's not a passive process, right? I mean, if you hired an internal marketing director to your organization, would you say, great, you're hired? And then that's it? Well, no, you're going to have conversations with them, right? Like, that's how you almost have it's a partnership, right? It goes back and forth, and there has to be dialogue behind it. You know, I look at Google reviews as probably one of the easiest low-hanging fruit here, right? It's one of Google's like, it's not a signal for increasing your map pack rankings, but it is a signal for increasing your map pack rankings, right? The other part of it too is also helps conversions, right? If you land on AC repair near me in the map rankings, that's in case anybody's wondering, I'll break it down into fifth grader talk. So you have the map when you're on Google, no worries. So when you Google AC repair near me, you're going to see some green check marks saying guaranteed, right? That's a local service ad. You're going to see an ad. Usually it's three of them, right? That's a Google ad, right? Or Google PPC. And then you're going to see the map pack, right? Which is the picture of a map with usually three businesses, sometimes a fourth if they're sponsored. And then below that are the local search results and where they click on it, go to the website. A lot of people are moving just to calling off of the map pack now, right? Or the Google business profile. So when they see that and they see three businesses or four businesses, and there's, A company that has 50 reviews, B company that has 75, and your company that has 1,000 five-star Google reviews, who are they going to call first? Well, naturally, the company that has 1,000 five-star reviews. So you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not pushing Google reviews along with your marketing company and the SEO work that they're doing.
Similar question on that I kind of popped in is when you Google a business or you Google a service nowadays, the first couple things are ads generally. Do you find that people like just skip the ads? Because that's what I do. I see, oh, ad.
So do I sometimes.
Like, is that something that you guys see?
No, 100%.
I'm hunting for those reviews Thaddeus was talking about.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you know what? Sometimes I'll click on ads just to make them spend money.
your
competitor click.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
No, but there's a tool that we use on the SEO side called Bright Local, and they did a survey breaking down the percentage of clicks that goes to each section on the search engine result page. So when you type in AC repair, plumber near me, electrician near me, 14% are clicking the local service ads, 11% are clicking the PPC ads, 2% are clicking on the map itself looking for a direction. Don't know why. 28% are clicking on the local map pack results, and 44% are clicking on the organic results underneath that. So 70% of the clicks are going to organic SEO, and the other 30% are going to the top and in the paid ads. So what does that tell you? Mm-hmm. Well, one, trust. People trust the organic results better. Why? Well, you feel like they've earned it, and that's why they're showing up there. Two, unless someone's in an emergency, they're probably not clicking the ads. So are you gearing your ads more towards language that is speaking to an emergency? Right? Are you studying the search terms that are in your ad account if you're running Google Ads, which, I mean, I think you should be, because you're missing out on a percentage of clicks if you're not doing it. If there's 1,000 searches a month for AC repair LA, and you're not doing Google Ads, well, you're automatically missing out on 110 possible clicks by not running Google Ads. But now you also get that data that Google gives you of the search terms that people are putting in there and looking for companies like yours, right? So it gives you a lot of data that you can then also use on the SEO side to be able to build out content for and show up for. So all in all, it's the answer is yes to should I do it. It's how much of it, where do I allocate the dollars based on what I have to spend, and how is it that I can continue to grow my market share? And again, it comes back to what is your goal?
Good point. I was like, there's so much psychology that goes into digital marketing. Someone told me, like, just because it's a sponsored ad, it's the very top of the list, doesn't mean it's necessarily the best one. I know for me, I'm more of a visual person, so I'm definitely looking at the numbers of reviews, but I also look at pictures. Like, I go in and this is weird, but I go and read the worst reviews first. I don't know. I just want to read them first, and then I'll go read some of the best ones. Yeah, I want to see, because then I'll kind of like make a deduction, like, okay, can I live with this and just try it out for myself based on some of these negative reviews? So I do look at the worst and then the positive.
Let me ask you that.
Perfect.
When you read the negative reviews, do you also read the owner's response or lack thereof?
I do notice that. Yes. And I like to see if there is an owner response and a reason why, and they kind of explain what happened versus the ones that just, there's no comment. That does make a difference. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Totally. I was going to say, like, what is it that gives you the confidence, even though there's negative reviews, to then still move forward with a purchase or at least giving them a call?
Oh, yeah. I would say having... having that owner response, but also like if I see any images of like the actual work done, or if I'm on, for instance, if I'm on Yelp, I'll look at pictures of the environment, the atmosphere, the food, all that kind of stuff. It comes into play. People's experience, how they felt, you know, with the results of the work. That's what usually gives me the confidence to move forward.
So a fully optimized Google business profile, huh?
Yeah,
funny how that works, huh?
Right?
This is actually a fascinating experiment right here, in that more often than not, if you just reverse engineer your own buying processes and your own buying procedures that you have in your head, you're going to be able to solve every customer problem that you're ever going to have. Look at how it is that you shop for shit, and chances are other people do the same things, right?
Yeah.
Well, here's one next level on that, is also looking at the other bad reviews and one-star reviews and negative reviews. And this goes for any product, by the way. Doesn't matter. Home services, HVAC, doesn't matter. Look at all...
Shout out to Amanda Triolo for this tip, by the way.
I would learn it before Amanda Triolo too, but she also said it on our podcast, is that you go and you read the one-star reviews from other companies, right? Now you know what people's pain points are, what people's problems are, what people's frustrations are. Now you reverse engineer that into your process to be able to mitigate those, right? Or speak your language to talk to those people that have had that before, because now you can alleviate a lot of their concerns.
Learn from the mistakes of others for free.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a person to do that. I love it. Like, seriously, I that's what I tell people. Sometimes mistakes, I call them golden nuggets, because they're lessons. And if I didn't, if it didn't cost me pain, if I get to just learn by watching someone else make a mistake, that's even better. No, learn what not to do. Yeah,
absolutely. Tony Robbins always says, and by the way, just for Thad,
hey everybody, it's Tony Robbins.
It's never a podcast unless I mention Tony Robbins, but he says, when you win, you party. When you lose, you ponder. Right. So those failures, those setbacks, it gives you an opportunity to learn a lesson and sit back and reverse engineer your process to figure out what you can do differently next time. When I was young in sales, I used to do this every time I got a no, because every objection I ever got in a sales call was a symptom of the presentation that I could have solved earlier.
Like, something that is a huge like determining factor for like success, especially like over time, is your approach to failure.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if you're just like chalking it up, or you're like, oh, that, you know, just didn't work out, whatever it was, you're kind of just passive on it and you don't reflect on that stuff. Like, you're not learning from that. You're not improving. I don't know who it is, but you know, the 1% every day, like get 1% better every single day. Like that's what that is.
But there's a great book called Mindset, and it talks about how there's a group of people, how you like embrace failure. And then there are people who, like, when you fail, they just quit. They just are utterly devastated. So I think if you kind of, it shuts you down. But if you like learn, it's like, okay, I made a mistake, I failed. Be grateful for the failure, because now you know what not to do next time. And pivot. You have to have a thick skin.
Carol Dweck.
Yes. It's a great book.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Great book.
What are your takes on AI? How's it? I'm having conversations with my friends on this almost every week, like with that Kale, how with these fake images out there. And I'm like, maybe there should be like disclaimers and obviously laws, a lot of regulation people are discussing, but how will AI impact the marketing? How will it impact how we serve as people? Do you see pros and cons? Is it going to eventually take us out of work? Your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's a whole can of worms and probably another hour conversation, but look, there's a lot of worry from people that AI is going to take my job. And you know what? It's probably going to take some people's jobs. But there's always going to be adaptations and spinoffs from it, you know. And I used, we had a conversation with somebody on our show, and I used the analogy of farming, right? You look at farming and what happened in agriculture, you know, in the early 1900s. Well, guess what? Everybody was farming. Right, there was all these small farms with their couple acre plots of lands, and as the machinery grew, and as there was advancements and everything grew, the employment rate for farming went down. But you know what spun off other things? Well, look at the factories that needed to be able to make the machinery. Right now, that grew. Right, look at all the other sectors, and like, okay, population grew, farming employment went down, but guess what? Other employment went up. Right, and you just have to reposition and repurpose yourself over into another place. And so that's one thing with AI, is that when you look at ChatGPT, for example, and how much people are, you know, scared of it. Well, no, ChatGPT still needs a human prompt in order to be able to put out the content. If you give it a shitty prompt to ChatGPT, guess what you're going to get? You're not going to get a very good result. You give it a great prompt, now you've got a great result. And in terms of, you know, so that's, I mean, there's a pro on that. I think it makes people more efficient too. You can accomplish more with less. You know, you look at a marketing side of things, and the danger of it is, write me a website for HVAC company near me and whatever, and you put it all on here. And now you've got this AI content, and if you don't check it and you don't edit it and all those things that go involved with it, now you've got you potentially sent something out there that is incorrect. Potentially.
Well, there was a friend of mine, he's in the SEO space, and he wrote a 20 question quiz on SEO and decided to give it to GPT to see how it would do. And it only got 6 answers right.
Oh.
So even from that side of things, it's not perfect yet. Nope. Right. So you need to have someone who can utilize that in your business. And I was listening to a podcast the other day with Peter Diamandis, and he is a tremendous thought leader, especially in the advancements of technology and things like that. But one of the things he talked about is he believes every company should have a chief AI officer moving forward. Someone who sole purpose is diving deep into AI. How can we utilize it? How can we leverage it within our business? It's never going to take the place of a human taking control of it, but how can we leverage it? It's just another way to leverage technology in your business, similar to how Field Edge is better than Yellow Pad technology. It's giving you another layer of leverage within your business to be able to dominate and move forward.
Mm-hmm. All right. Awesome. Well, we've asked AI questions a lot, and the answer seems pretty consistent. And that, like, it looks like it's this catalyst for something really amazing, and we're right on the cusp. But like, maybe we don't trust it.
Right. Well, this is the ethical dilemma behind it, right? You look at why did some people push to pause? You know, I believe it was Elon Musk who made the big pause. Well, he was original founder of OpenAI and maybe wanted to pause it so he could do something. right? Who knows? It's Elon Musk. There is a potential ethical dilemma behind it because now, okay, well, but it also goes into human ethics too, right? I mean, people in the world do bad shit. You know, why do we have spammers and hackers? Well, they're just going to do bad shit because that's their path of least resistance. And so making sure that there's some ethical components to an AI that if you fully let it out of the box, if you fully let it go, that is actually providing factual information and factual data and not as an ethical compromise. But then it goes to, okay, well, whose ethics is it following?
Correct.
Ooh, that's a whole
lot. Yeah. Is it a politician? Is it a politician making the ethics rules? Well, probably not going to be an ethical machine here, right?
Who gets to choose? That's a very good question.
Right? Who gets to choose?
For sure. All right, guys.
Well, yeah, that podcast with Peter Diamandis, I highly recommend it. I can find the name of it too. But if you wanted to go deep into AI and thinking about what is it capable of, and they got into a deep topic around this ethics component of it as well. And the whole Terminator, Doomsday, Skynet thing, like, that's not what it is. And it's not at that point. It's not even remotely close to that point. The reality is there are already great people that are put in place that are not going to do those kinds of things. And I think they even talked about it on the show. It was like 1 out of 1,000 people in general has a negative outlook on humanity and on people, and when given the opportunity will take malice on other people. So it's a very, very small percentage already that you're dealing with in terms of people taking advantage of it. And when you look at the adaptation of AI right now,
right,
most people aren't using it. So why not leverage it for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, there's like a Y2K energy around AI at certain times.
Yeah, like, definitely.
That's going to be the downfall of humanity. Yeah, I know.
That's what people did to TV when fucking everyone listened to the radio and read the newspaper, right? Like, people freaked out over the television and the car, rock music and the iPad. LG is always evolving and it's always going to keep changing. Humanity's still going to be here. So let's learn to accept the changes, roll with them, and figure out how to use them to our advantage.
Sorry, to Evan's point, and I don't know if this is actually factually correct or not. I'm just looking on a website right now. I wanted to see, you know, U.S. ChatGPT users by count. And according to the latest data available, they only have over 100 million users. Well, there's billions of people in the world, right? So not everybody's leveraging it, utilizing it the way that they need to. I mean, that's just one component of AI, by the way. It's the most notable. There's so many other ones.
Well, it's something like 14% of people are utilizing or have used AI, and of the 14%, I think it was 95% are not using it on a daily basis. So there you go.
And I was just gonna say, if you're gonna have robot overlords, you might as well get on their good side now.
Exactly. Use it to your advantage. Evan and Thaddeus, thank you both for being guests on the Profit Roadmap today. So people or listeners want to learn more about you, On Purpose Media, and HVAC Success Secrets Revealed, where can they find you?
OnPurposeMedia.ca, because we're Canadian, eh? That's a bad Canadian joke. Yeah, on purpose media, onpurposemedia.ca. Yeah, it's a bad Canadian joke. Onpurposemedia.ca is the website. You can find all of our information on there. We have our podcast link on there, HVAC Revealed. You can also Google HVAC Revealed. Will come up. At least last time I Googled it, we were pretty much all over page one. So if you want to listen to the podcast there, or just on any place that you subscribe to your podcasts, check that out too. Yeah. And I will say one thing, that if somebody does want, I don't know if it's, no, it's on there. So a complimentary marketing assessment or analysis. If you're thinking, hey, you know what? I don't know where my marketing currently stands. I don't know what it is. You know, my phone's not ringing. You know, I want to get my phone to ring. I want to sell more jobs. I want to grow my market share. Well, reach out to us. We'll do a complimentary, no obligation marketing analysis. The URL for that is onpurposemedia.ca/marketing-analysis. But it is also on our website.
Awesome. Sweet.
Oh yeah.
It's a mouthful, but we'll put it in the show notes.
We'll definitely get that in the show notes.
One of the simplest analysis that we do is a PPC analysis, and we just look at how often is your marketer diving into your PPC account and making changes. I looked at one of our now clients' accounts that we took over from a previous marketing company, also a Canadian company and a fairly big one. So you can kind of take a guess as to who that might be. But they had not made a single change in the ad account in a year. They were using ClickSys to block IP addresses, and that is done automatically based on spam. But that is it. They did no actual optimizations to the ad account in a year. So that kind of a thing happens all the time, where companies are just setting it on autopilot and letting it be. So if you want a quick analysis to see how you can check that for yourself, hit awesome. Us up and we can show you how.
Hey, listeners, take advantage of that analysis. It sounds like a sweet deal. And thank you everyone for listening to the Profit Roadmap. Remember, you can listen to this show on all major streaming platforms, including Apple, YouTube, Spotify, and more. And be sure to visit our show notes at serviceautopilot.com/podcast to get the links to all topics we covered in today's show. And if you have any questions, any guest recommendations, or if you want to be on the show and chat with Ryan and myself, email us at profitroadmap@exploretechnologies.com. Explore is spelled XPLOR. If you enjoyed today's show, please tell a friend.